I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
While you're taking a break from sports, KSON is putting you on the road to Stagecoach 8 times every weekday, thanks to your San Diego County Toyota dealers and Cox Communications. Ready for 3 days of live country music in the desert? Sign up now at KSON.com.
It was a good Tuesday for San Diego State basketball. Of course, last night the Aztecs won their 20th consecutive game, beating Wyoming 72-55. They're ranked fourth in the country. We'll talk to our college basketball analyst Jim Herrick Jr. coming up later this hour on Ben and Woods. Kawhi Leonard also had a big game for the Clippers. A nice road win at Dallas over the Mavericks, 110-107, 36 points, 11 rebounds for Kawhi. Everything coming up Aztecs at the moment at San Diego State. So we'll chat about that later this hour. It's Ben and Woods split show today as we hit our final hour. I'm here in our San Diego Intercom studios. Woodsy and Paul are out at Padres Fantasy Camp in Peoria, where they were hanging out with Mud Grant earlier in the show. He's their skipper for Fantasy Camp. And what's on tap today, gentlemen, on the Fantasy Camp schedule?
Well, I just walked into the locker room, Ben. I needed to go to the restroom, and I interrupted Randy Jones addressing all of the campers. Oh, so that went really well as he stopped and stared at me in silence as I calmly walked through to the restroom. And I know I'm going to get hit in kangaroo court later, which means I'll be fined. It's probably I'm going to be out a lot of money. Paul and I will be late to the game today. But it's unbelievable. The weather is perfect. Was just talking to Ashby as well. All the guys are here. Wally Joyner, Trevor Hoffman's coming today. I've heard Jake Peavy's going to make an appearance. Jace Tingler, I ran into him getting breakfast. It's a trip. I mean, Matt Strom was having a little breakfast with his skipper, and it's wild. I mean, it's a wild. I'm still such a little kid when it comes to the game of baseball.
Matt, I believe Matt said he'd come on with us tomorrow. So
yeah,
Matt Strom,
I can't wait, join
Ben and Woods tomorrow, and we're not that far away. I mean, now he was out early last year, if I remember correctly,
yeah,
when we were at fantasy camp too. So part of
I'm not
maybe regular routine.
Bold,
we
I'm not going to make. Yeah, we were
year.
Gushing over him last year, and once he went to the bullpen, he was a little better, but. I'm not going to make any bold predictions.
You know, that is it's a good point, though, because you'll assume that Matt Strom is now, ticketed for the bullpen. I mean, I don't want to place any limitations on the guy, but where the Padres bullpen was last year to where it is now with Drew Pomeranz, obviously the addition in the offseason and free agency, Strom now an established part of it, and some of the young guys like Munoz who came up at the end of the season and really made a difference to go with, maybe the best closer in all of baseball, Kirby Yates. We may be underestimating the impact the bullpen could have on these 2020 Padres. They can really shorten games this year if everything plays out the way that it looks like it could possibly do.
I couldn't agree more. And the re-addition of Craig Stammen as a guy that can go out and eat up a lot of innings. And I know, some people were up in arms, 3-year deal, guy's 36 years old, but. Ben, I'll tell you what, man, Craig was pretty good when he didn't have to. It seemed like Andy rode Craig. That's what you do when you're a manager. You go to the guys that you can trust. And I feel like he thought, I can trust Craig Stammen. I think he's going to be much more effective when he doesn't have to pitch, every single day. And I think the pieces that they've added and then getting guys back that were injured last year, Castillo, guys like that. The emergence, like you said, of Munoz, Michelle Baez, all these guys, we don't know. We just know that there's a tremendous amount of them, and a lot of them have really electric stuff.
Well, and hopefully the starting pitching can help out the
bullpen,
because you had guys like Chris Paddock on a pitching limit last year. If Garrett Richards.
You had Nick Margavish's.
Exactly.
Eric Lauer.
If you got guys only going 3-4, sometimes 5 innings, that's going to kill your bullpen, especially in the second half of the year. So if the starting rotation can at least get you into the 6th, 7th inning on every other day.
It could win some ball games.
Yeah, I don't know that the Padres can, add 20 wins and get, to 90 in a playoff team, but the bullpen is an area where you tend to look, and when you see teams that are playoff contenders and championship contenders, very few of them have poor bullpens. The Washington Nationals actually were kind of an exception last year. They didn't have a very good pen, but the pen played very well once they got to the postseason.
Yeah, the freaking Red Sox a few years ago had a horrible bullpen. And it was one of my worst quotes ever. I said, Sox fans, I know you're excited about your offense. I know you're excited about your starters. You're not winning a World Series with your garbage bullpen. And what did they do? They went out and won the World Series with their garbage bullpen. You never know what can happen once you get into the dance, obviously. But, you know, on paper, the Padres' bullpen looks to be a strength. And I got to imagine, Ben, first-time big league manager, that's what would keep me up at night, managing the bullpen. You make your lineup, and if they hit, great. If they don't, great. I mean, that's still going to be your lineup for the most part. You know, your 5-6 core guys are going to be in there every day. Managing the bullpen, oh, my God. Can you even imagine the stress of that, finding out who slots where, finding out who's been throwing well, who hasn't? That, to me, is the hardest part of any type of managing, is managing that pen. Good news for Jace Tingler is he's got a lot of weapons down there.
Well, not only is that one of the challenges, but he also has to deal with a new rule that will go into effect this year for the bullpen.
Yeah.
That each bullpen guy who comes out will have to face at least three batters or end the inning before you can take him out of the game. That, I mean, strategically, when you think about that, that changes a whole lot. I mean, that makes the job much harder for managers, because you're going to have to look down the lineup, 2-3 spots. You can't just say, okay, he's next, I'm going to get this guy in for one batter, and then I can pull him and do something else. You have to think, you know, this is chess now. You have to think 3-4 moves down the road. You know, who are the next two batters? Do they have two guys off the bench who can come off as pinch hitters? Are they going to want to burn both of them right here? That's a lot to think about, especially for a first-year manager. Now, on the other end, all the other managers are going to have to deal with this for the first time. So,
exactly.
In a sense, Jace Tingler isn't behind any of the others. He's going to be playing that same game of trying to figure out how it works. So maybe, you know, in that sense, Jace Tingler can go, well, at least I'm in the same boat as everyone else when it comes to this new rule.
Well, and I'll tell you, man, if I were him, and I don't know what the spring training rules are, I'm assuming that they're, you know, I know that they can do different things and it can be a little more lax. I'm managing every spring training game like I would a big league game. I really am, and I'm going to start thinking like that immediately from day one. And even a split squad game, whatever it may be, I'm really going to, if I'm hit, put my head down and say, all right, this is how it's going to be. Let me manage this game like I would if we were at Petco Park or Coors Field or anywhere else.
So I feel like I must be on a roll today, Woods, because I have counted no less than 5 times during this show that you have told me that you could not agree with me more.
Is that right?
I just want to thank you for that, because it makes me feel good when I say something and I get the big head nod from Woods, like, yes, that I agree with that, Ben. That is a smart, intelligent take on the world of sports. And I think you've done it 5 times today, so I want to thank you for that.
Well, I'd never get it from you, so I figure if I give you extra, then maybe you'll start to reciprocate.
Well, I feel like it's not my job to try to agree with you. In fact, I try as much as I can to disagree with you when the opportunity arises. Because, I think conflict is good for radio.
It is. It's also kind of canned sometimes. I don't like the canned conflict. Our best conflicts are when we truly disagree.
Oh, there's been some good ones.
We have had some really good ones.
But it has to be genuine. You're right.
It's got to be genuine.
You can't just disagreement.
I don't agree. You crazy. Like, I don't want to do that bit. I hate it.
Invent it. I mean, the idea is you try to take a controversial moment in sports, and then you break it down from a couple of different angles, and then your two hosts go at it from two different sides. Our problem is that we do tend to think a bit alike. Like, for instance, the brawl at the end of the Kansas State game. What would be your take on what happened
Shannon
last night?
Sharp's going to think it was a good idea, and Skip Bayless is going to
think it's atrocious.
It.
Right?
Yeah. Listen. Things happen. I don't wring my hands over things like that very much. You don't want to see that in college. You really don't want to see that in the pros either, Ben. But there's something different about college. There's something different about high school. You know, even below that. But I can certainly understand the frustration of getting your ass kicked, getting embarrassed, and tempers do flare. It wasn't, you know, for as gnarly as it looked on TV, and there was a guy holding a stool up over his head, as is the case with most of these, rarely does a punch land. Rarely. I mean, it's a lot of pushing, a lot of shoving, a lot of high energy, but rarely do you see somebody just get cold cocked, you know, and just knocked out. The, you know, Bautista and Ruggie Odor, like, you saw that and you're like, wow, that is not a baseball fight. I've never seen that. But the pushing and shoving, I've got to say, Benny, I'm a big, big fan of chippiness. Big, big fan. Huge fan. And I will say to my team sometimes, hey, maybe let's get chippy today because I really like playing when we get chippy. It's fun.
See, now, I don't think there's really any point to it. It just detracts from what you're there to actually do, which is compete. I will say this. I mean, look at who was playing. It's Kansas State.
Yep.
They're rivals. They're in the same state. They probably run into each other in whatever farm bars that they go to, you know, when they're not playing basketball. You're going to have some bad blood, and especially when it's a blowout. One team is getting their hat handed to them. They're down by 21 in the closing seconds. We can't be completely shocked that this happens in college basketball. In fact, the surprising thing is that it doesn't happen a little more often already. I mean, give coaches credit for
blowouts and stuff.
Keeping the discipline for the most part in college basketball going, because you got teams like Kansas that are going to wipe the floor with opponents. It doesn't feel good to get destroyed by your big rival. I'm not surprised to see some bad blood at an end of a game like that.
I'm not either. I kind of like a little attitude. I like a little chippiness, as you know. I like a little red ass, Ben.
I know you do. And I think it's to be avoided, especially in college where you're trying to mold young men for the future, that it's not a great example to be setting for the red. And there will be suspensions. There should be suspension. It can't just be swept under the carpet. It can't be ignored. But I don't think anyone should be, like, done for the season. Even D'Souza picked up the chair, the stool. It didn't whack anyone over the head with it. It was probably a bad choice, and someone realized it right away, put it down. He should sit for a game, maybe two. It's not going to ultimately affect their NCAA tournament chances. They'll be in March Madness. They'll have a good seed, and they're going to be one of the teams to beat. They might 100%. Be the best, most talented team in the country right now. And, you know, San Diego State could have to face them somewhere down the line in the NCAA tournament if everything goes well.
I agree. I think there will be punishments that are handed out. They're not going to blow your hair back. They're not going to be so egregious that I can't believe he's gone for the year. It's not going to be anything like that because, frankly, nothing happened other than pushing and shoving.
Plus, it's the coaches who decide, and, you know, the coaches know that their livelihood depends on a deep run in the NCAA tournament. So they're not going to come down too hard and hamstring themselves the rest of the season if they don't really have to.
Yeah, do the Nick Saban. You know, you sit out the first play of the first quarter. He's learned his lesson. We're going to handle it in-house, and we'll go from there.
This whole thing that's going on in Australia is awful. I just saw a story that in addition to the fires, they now have these, like, deadly spiders that are all over the place. It's just terrible. If you want to help out, the wildlife is one of the things that needs our help. Not those spiders in particular. They can just, they can go away. But things like the koalas and other, I mean, like millions, even billions, they're saying, of animals that have lost their lives. The zoo here in San Diego, San Diego Zoo, collecting donations to help save koalas and other animals devastated by the Australian wildfires. If you want to make a donation, just go to our website, 973thefansd.com. You can chip in to the Australian wildfire relief effort. It is Pro-Am Day at the Farmers Insurance Open. Jim Rome's going to be broadcasting live coming up at 9 o'clock. We still got more to get to. I didn't get to that. Have we found out yet who did not vote for Derek Jeter and why?
No.
I'm just curious as to the why. More than the who.
I still haven't found it.
It's the why that I want to know. We'll talk about that next with Ben and Woods. Let's get a check of traffic right now on 97.3. The Fan, here's Kelly Danick.
Plenty of stuff to slow you down this morning. Westbound side of the 78's got a crash just before El Camino Real. Looks like a couple vehicles there over to the right shoulder. Traveling on westbound 52 past Mast Boulevard, an accident involving two or three vehicles there in the center divide. On the Mission Gorge Road on-ramp to westbound 8, an accident involving a couple vehicles. Watch out for a vehicle fire northbound side of the 125 just before H Street. That is over to the right shoulder. I'm Kelly Danick with Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan.
We'll be right back.
All right, Woods, I'm about to potentially get you in a lot of trouble here in San Diego.
Get me in trouble or you?
Yep. Well, I mean, you get yourself in trouble. You have the opportunity to not get into trouble. But I'm going to ask you a question that at least has the potential to get you in trouble. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Who had the better career overall? Derek Jeter or Tony Gwynn?
Oh, boy.
The better career?
Yeah.
Like if I could pick a career to have?
You just who had the better baseball career? Derek Jeter or Tony Gwynn?
I'm taking those six rings, buddy. Right?
All right, who was the better baseball player, Derek Jeter or Tony Gwynn?
I'm going to please.
Now he's really trying to get you in trouble.
Yeah, you're trying to kill me here. I listen, and I think I know where you're going with this. I did not know this, and I looked this up last night. Last night, Ben, I didn't know that Jeets had more hits than Tony Gwynn. I really didn't. I swear to God, I did not know that Jeter had more hits. I think they played the same number of years, which was 20, and Jeets had a few more 100 hits than TG. TG was, you know, we were talking about it this weekend at my tournament. Went to high school with a kid in Connecticut, and we play baseball together now, you know, 30 years later. And we both had Tony Gwynn posters on our wall all the way across the country. So Tony was always one of my favorite players. But, you know, Jeter obviously was my guy for many, many years. And the better baseball player, I think Tony Gwynn was a better hitter. I think watching him hit, you look at his numbers against the best pitchers in the world, and he bats like 400 against all these Cy Young winners. So I think he was the better hitter. I think Jeter played a tougher position. Some would say that he didn't play it as well as Tony played right field. I would have to lean Jeets a little bit, but mostly because of the rings, the market, and things like that. But, you know, you're not going to go wrong either way. I love them both very much.
Tony Gwynn had the higher batting average, obviously, 338 to 310. Tony Gwynn had a higher on-base percentage, 388 to 377. Interestingly, Tony had a higher slugging percentage, 459
that's wild,
to 440.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that because Derek Jeter hit more home runs.
He had a lot of doubles, too.
Had 260 compared to just 135 for Tony Gwynn in his career. WAR, though, because you get extra value out of that shortstop position, Derek Jeter's career WAR was 72.4, and Tony's was 69.2. So at least by the advanced metrics, they're very even players.
So close, right?
And both were Hall of Famers. You know, Derek Jeter closer to unanimous than Tony Gwynn was, although both were very high,
yeah.
You know, close to 100%, but not quite there. There's no right or wrong answer to the question. I grew up in San Diego and can't imagine a better hitter that I'll ever see in my lifetime than watching Tony Gwynn. It was truly amazing.
It is.
To go to games and watch him play and just pepper balls through the 5.5 hole and get two or three hits just like every single night. It was so remarkable. The fact that he wouldn't strike out, he could make contact, he could wield a bat in ways that no one else could. And he couldn't even kind of explain it to other people how he could do it. It was so amazing. Derek Jeter is an incredible player, an incredible leader. What he did with the New York Yankees and is a deserving Hall of Famer. I don't think he had that raw baseball talent that Tony Gwynn was just born with.
I don't think so either. And you know, you always hear the stories about Tony hitting 300-400 balls off the tee, and I think the work ethic for both guys. But listen, both guys spent their entire careers with one team. Both guys were the leaders of their team, both kind of quiet leaders, both of them, you know, never really, no major issues off the field for either of them. And I just, they're so comparable to me. They really are. And I think both of them, I know that when Tony retired, I kind of looked at this last night sitting in my hotel room, and you know, Jeter had so many nice things to say. Jeter and Joe Girardi talking about Tony Gwynn, and I think vice versa. I think there was a lot of respect there for both. But, you know, for me, the thing I said about Jeter yesterday is you can run out all the defensive metrics you want to, the old joke that he can't go to his left, whatever. For me, Ben, if they hit a ground ball near shortstop in the playoffs, I didn't blink an eye. I knew the play was going to get made. If I needed a sack fly, if I needed a clutch single to drive in a run in a World Series game or a playoff game, I knew he was coming through. I knew it. And he did so many more times than he didn't. And for me, God, they are so comparable in their careers and just what they've done. They're both remarkable, remarkable human beings and baseball players.
And my point here is that it blows my mind that both of them had people who didn't vote for them for the Hall of Fame. In Tony's case, he received 97.6% of the vote. That was 532 out of 545 ballots that were cast in 2007. So there were 13 people who didn't vote for Tony Gwynn. In Derek Jeter's case, of course, yesterday it was 396 out of 397, 99.7%. And I don't believe they've yet to identify the one person who didn't vote for Derek Jeter, unless I've missed it this morning.
I haven't seen it either.
I don't care so much as to the who. I would love to know the why, though. What was your rationale? Give me your one logical reason why. Is it because you don't think anyone should be unanimous? That's pretty dumb. I mean, where are you deciding? Is it because you wanted to vote for 10 other people and leave Derek Jeter because you knew he'd get in? That's kind of dumb. I can't come up with a not dumb reason to not vote for Derek Jeter, just like I couldn't come up with a not dumb reason to not vote for Tony Gwynn.
I couldn't either. I mean, there's just no two ways about it for me with either of those guys. And, you know, I've seen a lot of the arguments of the, well, so-and-so didn't get in unanimous, so Jeter shouldn't. And okay, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if that, like Mudd said earlier, that's your opinion, great.
That doesn't compute for me, though.
But, no, my thing is this. If it was a flawed system and it's working its way towards not being flawed and letting surefire Hall of Famers get in unanimously, like, let's make this a thing. It doesn't have to be all Yankees, trust me. When, you know, somebody comes up that is absolutely deserving, I think it should be unanimous. Unanimous is a good thing. It shouldn't, you know, you're a Hall of Famer regardless, and whether you miss it by one vote or 13 votes, you're still a Hall of Famer and one of the best to ever do it. So I think just because it's been flawed and just because Willie Mays and Babe Ruth and guys like that didn't get in at 100% doesn't mean we shouldn't fix that.
Ultimately, the guys who have the ballot from the Baseball Writers Association, you know, they're given instructions. Here's your ballot. Is this guy a Hall of Famer or not? Put a check mark next to his name if you think he's a Hall of Famer. It's not, hey, do you think anyone should be unanimous? It's not, you know, do
you
agree with him, you know, personally or politically? It's a simple yes or no question. Is he a Hall of Famer or not? Check mark or no. And you can't not put a check mark next to Derek Jeter's name. You just can't.
You can't.
And I'd say that about a bunch of guys. We did the numbers earlier. You know, Babe Ruth only got 95% of the vote for the Hall of Fame. I mean, Babe Ruth, who... I mean, he had 50 home runs in a year when the second guy had like 9. I mean, there were no more clear Hall of Famers out there than someone like Babe Ruth, and even he wouldn't get close to all of the vote. It just makes no sense to me.
No, I know, and Carlos makes a point here on Twitter, Ben. He says, Jeter got the advantage of playing in a ton of postseason games to boost his stats. I don't look at it as boosting stats. You still have to get those stats, right? I mean... Ted Williams had a chance in the postseason a few times, didn't do anything. Mike Trout's had a couple of chances, didn't do anything. You still have to get them, right?
But do those count against?
Do those count, Ben?
They don't. Hit totals, RBIs, home runs, postseason are a complete separate category.
Okay, well then in that case, I'll just say suck it, Carlos. How about that?
Now, at the same time, Tony won 8 batting titles. Jeter didn't win any.
Right.
But you're just comparing yourself to other guys. I mean, does it matter if someone else had a great year that year? Your numbers are your numbers.
Your numbers are your numbers.
You can win a batting title or not. You know, it has nothing to do with how you played. That's how other people played. So I don't think that should necessarily be the be-all, end-all either, just the fact that, you know, one guy had 8 batting titles and the other guy didn't have any. So, anyway, I'm sure it'll come out at some point.
Just suck it, Carlos. How about that?
I'm sure it'll come out at some point. We'll talk some college basketball next. The Aztecs are now 20-0. They have matched the best-ever start from the Kawhi Leonard team back in 2010-2011. Our NCAA Hoops analyst and former Aztecs interim head coach, and I did not know that until yesterday, Jim Herrick Jr. is going to be with us when we come back. It's Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Everybody, have you heard? If you ain't the guy.
Woods had a little news from last night that I hadn't heard yet. On the TV broadcast, the Aztecs game, I heard him mention that Malachi Flynn was a little under the weather, but Woodsy, it was more than just that?
Yeah, apparently he had really gnarly food poisoning. They had been pumping him full of IVs, and he did not eat a single thing yesterday. And went out and, what, dropped 18, 5, and 5, or something like that last night. So that's some intestinal fortitude, Benny.
Very Jordan-like.
Very Jordan.
Very Jordan-like. We're going to talk Aztecs basketball and more college hoops at the big brawl in the Kansas-Kansas State game with Jim Herrick Jr. That is coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan with Kelly Danick.
Wrapping up our morning drive with a few problem spots. If you're traveling on the northbound side of the 67 Riverford Road off-ramp, there is a tree down in lanes. Traveling on the Market Street on-ramp to northbound 15, stalled vehicle. Looks like that is over to the right shoulder. Crash clearing on the westbound side of the 52 past Mast Boulevard. And if you're traveling on the northbound 125 right before H Street, got a vehicle fire over to the right shoulder. I'm Kelly Danick with Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan.
Well, let's go out to our SDCCU fan hotline right now. We are joined by our college basketball analyst. He's with us every Wednesday through March Madness. Jim Herrick Jr. Joins us here on 97.3 The Fan and Ben and Woods. And Coach, I knew you worked at San Diego State. You've talked about it many times with us. I didn't know until yesterday, though, that you actually got a chance to be the interim head coach, that your name is on that list, along with Steve Fisher and Brian Dutcher and, Tim Vesey and Smokey Gaines, of all the coaches in San Diego State basketball history.
Well, thanks, Ben and Woods. That made my day. I'm glad that that my stat line is along with the prestigious guys and Hall of Fame guys like Steve Fisher. Make sure you don't scroll down and look at that record, though.
You have a few wins to go to catch up to Fish.
Make sure you don't take that mouse scroll over and see that record for those last part of that game.
So can you tell me the story? Because this was before I must have been younger at the time. I don't remember. It was a rough season, and you took over for the last seven games. Now, in your defense, your winning percentage was about the same as what had gone on before you took over.
Ben, that is a gentle way to put it. I will give you that. Yes. Yes. The stat line looks good. The record, not so good.
So what was the story that year?
We started out the year before a couple with Jim Brandenburg. I'd come down and I was the I was an assistant with we had a really good staff and good guys and it was a tough sell. I'll go back in the history books on it and they brought Jim Brandenburg from Wyoming after he had a great run in the NCAA tournament and all he talked about all the time is they're going to build this as a sleeping giant. They're going to build this arena. The arena is going to be great. Blah blah blah. And we have the bonds filled and football. We had Marshall Faulk with football, and football starting to take off with Luganville, and it just kept running into a hurdle. And I think that Jim Brandenburg left a great Wyoming program that he had built and put his name on, and came down here and thought that it was going to be they're going to give him a stadium, an arena, and a practice facility, and all the things that obviously all the things they have now. Because I walk in there now and I joke with some of our ex players like Cordy Miller and Joe McNall and Chad Nelson, and said, hey, boy, I tell you what, it sure wasn't like this when we were here, because we were over in Peterson Gym, and our offices were in a trailer, and, right along Fraternity Row. And long story short is we started out, and we had a bunch of injuries. We'd come off a pretty good season the year before, and we had most of our team back. We had signed two really good San Diego players, Cordy Miller and Joe McNall, that were kind of our staples, and had a good core of people, and we got hit by the injury bug. It was Coach Brandenburg's fifth year, and it kind of tailspin, and we kind of lost our team and lost our confidence, and guys went out. Cordy Miller went out with a knee sprain. Joe McNall went out. We didn't have a front line, and it went from bad to worse really quick. And I think Fred Miller came in, and we had an incident that happened on the road in Colorado. The Colorado, it used to be the Colorado State Wyoming swing. Well, back in the day, forget the charter plane that Steve Fisher was able to put in place. Now we were driving vans, so we had to every coach had a van full of guys, and it was an icy road, and we had gotten to kind of a pileup accident driving from Colorado State. And I don't know. It could have been a number of things. We got in an accident in our vans, and, you know, a couple guys got hurt and what have you. And I think Fred Miller kind of came in and said, okay, we've pushed this envelope as far as we could push it. And rightfully so. He always made it a point to let us know that football was king and football was a priority, and it was. And back in those days, I think, you know, all things being equal, he just kind of he made football his priority for that. And not that he diminished basketball or anything. I just think he was a football guy, and he came in and just said, "Hey, we're going to make a change. We're going to change directions." And then he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I need someone to run the ship for the last seven games, and it's going to be you. If you don't want it, then you can leave your keys on the desk too." But you know, I'm a young here. I am. I'm a young 26 year old, and I'm going, "You're going to give me the keys to what? Your car?
The whole thing."
And I you prepared. You dreamed about it. That's why you got into coaching. And he said, "Hey, you know, you're going to run the ship for the last seven games, and you know, see what you got, and you know, make sure no one gets hurt. I don't want any incidents." And it was probably, you know, was some of the funnest seven games I've ever had in my life. Now, that's not how you want to get your first head coaching job, you know, because we had a great staff, and Jim Brandenburg hired me, and it was a tough incident to go through. But on the opposite side, we implemented some things, and I gave the ball to Tony Clark every time down. I said, "Tony Clark, let me be crystal clear. Let me give you a crystal clear understanding. I want you shooting it every single time." When you don't shoot it, then someone else is shooting it, and you're not shooting it. So shoot it every single time. And so, you know,
and
Utah, we gave BYU a great run at BYU, and almost beat Hawaii at home, and you know, kind of started the ball rolling. And you know, long story short, I had gone to I actually petitioned for the job a little bit. That's when they were going to give it to Fred Miller wanted to give it to Jerry Tarkanian, and that didn't happen.
Controversial at the time, obviously.
A little controversial at the time, and you know, I just said, "Hey, make sure I get out of the way, because you know, our families are like the Hatfields and McCoys." So you know,
this is so crazy, because ultimately the 2-26 was the record, and you didn't get either of the two. But I mean, Tony Clark, this is the same Tony Clark who's now the director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, who had the great baseball career. He was your guy shooting every time down the court.
Oh yeah, we got him as a transfer from Arizona. And I know this is what you didn't want to talk about this morning, but we got him for a transfer from Arizona, and he was eligible at Christmas. So at Christmas time, not only we got Joe McNall, one of the Player of the Year in San Diego, 6'9". Cordy Miller, one of the best players coming out of San Diego at Torrey Pines High School. Tony Clark transferring in. We got our guards back. Ray Bearfield, who his son played at Utah last year, was the guard that made the run with them. That was his son, so we'd always talk. And we had a really good team. We thought we, on paper, we had a really good team. And then it kind of spiraled out of control, and guys got hurt and what have you. But Tony Clark and Ray Bearfield were healthy down the stretch, and I just told them, "Hey, you're shooting it every time down. We're up and down. Have fun. Let the chains off, and let's go." And, you know, we still laugh about it to this day, some of us. And we almost had a couple wins. And, you know, lo and behold, I said, "Well, if you really don't care about basketball, if it's a secondary thought to you and we're a football school, hey, I'll take the job for cheap. You know, you can get me for a lemonade stand."
And now here we are today with Viejas Arena filled with 12,414 screaming fans.
Screaming fans.
Like, yeah, it was last night. I mean, right. Night and day, just under 30 years later. That was the longest digression in history, but a fun and interesting story. Bring us to today, though, and where this team is, ranked fourth in the country. They continue to pass every test, and the Mountain West is yet to put up a challenger that can keep it within, you know, after that San Jose State scare. They haven't won a game by less than 9 points in the last 44 days. You don't, college basketball, that doesn't happen where you win every game by close to double digits, Coach.
No, it doesn't. And they're on a roll right now. I am the ultimate of that before, and Dutcher's the after picture now, because we always laugh about it. And that environment, I mean, I say, like, you know, I walk in there sometimes and I go, because I was the before picture, and we were like, I look at some of the guys, you know, Tony Clark and Joe McNall, these guys, and Chad Nelson and his dad sit across the way right behind the bench, and they're big boosters, and They helped start our booster club back in 1989, and they were our first. He said, we want to join the booster club. I said, we don't have a booster club. They go, well, and they're still going to games. And I walk in there like a last night's environment, and you go, wow. I mean, it was impressive. And I've said to a lot of people a lot of times, unless you've been in there, it's probably the best environment west of the Mississippi. I would say outside of Lawrence, Kansas, if you've been into Outfog Field, it is a great college environment. And it's better than the Arizona run when Lute Olson was there. And when you bring recruits in there, and there's 12,000 screaming fans, and that's the vision I saw that, you know, everyone promised and thought they could build in the Sleeping Giant in San Diego State. And they got it going. Dutch has it going. And, you know, they're on a run right now. And, you know, they were, you know, San Diego State's a double, they're going to be double digit favorites the rest of the way. I mean, they beat Wyoming by 20 at their place, and they come down here, and, you know, they were, you know, something like a 20, 25-point, you know, favorite in here, and they kind of walked their way through. And, you know, Flynn has a good line, and Fegan doesn't even play well, and they beat him by 20. And, you know, I've watched the league. I've seen every team play. I don't see anyone talent-wise, and Dutch really has them guard and playing great defense. And so, you know, hey, they're on a great run, and so – you know, all the bandwagon people that weren't on before jump on, and I think they have a real good chance this year.
We are talking to Jim Herrick Jr., our college basketball analyst here on Ben and Woods, and Coach, that was a pretty crazy scene last night there between Kansas and Kansas State. You mentioned Kansas earlier. It happens. You know, our take was generally, hey man, it happens. But what are the bigger ramifications from a brawl like that? And you know, if you were the coach, are you suspending your guys for a couple of games? How does that work?
Well, I think they're going to take the decision out of the coach's hands. I think the league's going to jump involved. The NCAA involved. I don't know, but certainly the Big 12 is going to jump involved. And you know, I just think too that there's and it's a big rivalry game. If you don't know the rivalry between Kansas and Kansas State, there's some bitterness going on, and there's a lot of rivalry going on in there. And if you don't know the rivalry between the coaches, there's some animosity there. You know, he was at Illinois when he was at Purdue, and it's a Midwest thing, and they know each other. And you know, when he took over at Illinois and he went to Kansas, you know, there was some things where, you know, he's dead and gone. And, you know, so there's a history there with the coaches as well. I mean, and you've got to be able to control your players. Oh, nothing like that should ever happen in college basketball. That was absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen a kid go into the stands, pick up a chair. If he takes that chair and makes a swing.
Oh, it's church.
Now
yeah.
It's criminal.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, it's that's really bad.
And yeah, and you know, they've got, you know, you always tell your team you want to represent the university. You know, we had one rule, one of our main rules we've always had is don't embarrass the university on or off the floor. That encompasses everything. You know, and you know, you set rules in place for usually your best players, and you know, you say, hey, you know, you want to act, you want to be treated like an adult, then act like an adult. You want to get treated like a kid, then I will. Then you're acting the way you're supposed to be. But that was something out of a street yard gang, you know, down in the city, down in the park somewhere, where, you know, they're just going to go after. Now, you know, I'm not going to blame anybody, but he, you know, you don't ever stand over a player. I mean, I played, and you guys probably played, and you know, that's just out of respect for the game. You know, to make a block and then stand over a player, but. I just thought that was as a big a black eye in our sport as we've had in a very long time.
At the same time, Coach, you don't, when you're just running out the clock and it's a 20-point game, you don't try to steal the ball and show up the other team as well. There's both sides on this brawl last night, for sure.
Right, right. I agree. You don't go steal the ball when there's 20 seconds left. You're going to get beat. The game's over. You know, you take your lickings, and I used to say, hey, shake their hand. They beat you tonight. You know, when guys were kind of, you know, moping off the floor, shake their hand, look their eye, they beat you. You know, come back next time and give a good performance. You don't go steal the ball from them. And then, you know, you make the block. And it was just all unnecessary, all uncalled for. There's a respect of sportsmanship that we've always kind of agreed to of coaches and players. And I played at Pepperdine. And you just don't do that. And that was really ugly.
Talking to Jim Herrick Jr. and Coach, looking ahead – Next game for San Diego State, they'll go for 21 in a row, which would be the program record, at UNLV, a team that got off to a really just terrible start this year. I mean, they look like they might have one of their worst years in a long time. They've kind of turned things around. They're now 6-1 Mountain West Conference play. I don't know if you've had a chance to catch much of them. What's going on, and how dangerous is this game coming up on Sunday for San Diego State?
Might be the most dangerous game they've got left on the road because, you know, now they're the hunted, and they're gonna have the target on their back, and that's an up and down team. I saw them beat Utah State by what, 20, 15, 20 points, and really take it to them. And they got a new coach, and they got a bunch of young guys, and they're playing free, and they're kind of loose, and you know, it's on a Sunday, and it's one of those games that I said if Brian has them sleeping just a little bit through there, that could be a wake up call. But I don't see them. You know, I think they're so talented. I think Dutcher has them so focused in. I don't see that happening. But you know, I had a great high school coach one time that we were really good. We were in the final for the CIF playoffs, and he said, "Guys, let me tell you something. If we play our worst game and they play their best game, then there might be a chance." And that's kind of way I feel like San Diego State's team is so laser focused in right now that you know, they can have a marginal game, but their defense travels and their defense will carry them through. And it'll be a tough game. Any game on the road is tough. Any win on the road is a great road win. And you know, we'll be watching on Sunday.
And how if the Aztecs do lose, because there's still a good chance, they got a lot of games left. They got to go to New Mexico. They got to go to Nevada. If they do lose, they got to go to Boise State.
Yeah.
How much are they going to hammer them in terms of ranking, in terms of seeding? I mean, can they, one loss, is that going to still be a two seed at worst, or are they going to try to knock them down big time if they do lose?
I think if they have one loss, especially if it's on the road, in the pit's always a tough place. It depends where they lose. If they go to Wyoming and lose to Wyoming, which they've already won, that won't happen. But the three road games they have left that you just mentioned are all tough places to play. At Boise is a tough place to play. The pit's always a tough place to play. And then they've got to go to Nevada, which, you know, they're up and down too. But I think that – I don't think they'll knock them that, because the league's getting more respect. You look at their record, and they have not lost, and they've got some good wins. They got some good non-conference wins, so they're playing to stay in the West right now. I don't see them getting out of a four seed, which keeps them in the West. I don't, you know, there's a possibility they could be a one. There could be a possibility, certainly, be a two and three and four. I don't see them dropping with how many games they got left with the conference, with their schedule. I don't see them dropping below four if they lose a game or two, and that keeps them in. Where is it?
Sacramento, probably. Yeah, Sacramento.
Yeah. At Sacramento, and then it gets them to Staples, you know, should they win the first two in the Sweet 16. So I don't think they knock them down, because they've got good strength of schedule, they've got good non-conference, and, you know, you're gonna lose a game or two. I mean, unless you're the end of the 76 Indiana Hoosiers, but they, you know, they get a chance to win every game, and I don't think they'll fall that far.
Well, Coach, great stuff. I can't look forward to all of our conversations the rest of the season. And from now on, I will introduce you as the number 16 on the all-time head coaching win list at San Diego State.
Ben and Woods, you made my day today on that one.
Coach Jim Eric Jr., our college basketball analyst, appearing on our SDCCU fan hotline. San Diego County Credit Union has low mortgage loan rates. Apply today. Equal housing opportunity. For details, call 877-SDCC4U or visit SDCCU.com. And Coach just basically took us right to the end of the show. It was a great one today. If you missed any of it, make sure you go back, radio.com app. We had Jim Rome on. We had Mark Grant on in our 7 o'clock hour. Woodsy and Paul are headed back out for another day of fantasy camp out there at the Peoria Sports Complex. Hammer doing a great job, as always, here in the studio with me. And Brian Cohen, day two, running the controls, doing an excellent job. Jim Rome, live from Torrey Pines, coming up next. But right now, this hour's Grand Slam giveaway keyword is happy. Text HAPPY to 72881 for your chance to win your share of over $180,000 in the Fan's National Cash Contest. Message and data rates apply. Good luck from 97.3 The Fan. I think Woods is long gone. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 5.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.